Last Wednesday, a bill was filed that would put fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables onto the menus of school cafeterias nationwide. The bill allocates $20 million for the purchase of salad bars, $20 million towards grants for farm-to-school partnerships, and $100 million to upgrade cafeteria equipment. The bill dovetails with an overhaul of the National Food Lunch Program that is expected to begin in 2010. Some 31 million students each year eat lunch at school each year, and there is an agreement that most of those meals are actually bad for their health. My guest today is Lisa Bennett, co-author of the new book Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability. It's a handbook that students, parents, and school staff can use to put farm-fresh foods onto lunch plates and gardens into playgrounds. It explores four areas of sustainability: food, the campus, community, and learning. Lisa Bennett is also the communications director with the Center for Eco-Literacy. Welcome to Uprising.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. First, explain the scope of the school lunch program in general. How many children are we talking about here? I said 31 million students each year eat school lunches. So that's a lot of children. And how big is this program nationally?
Well, it's enormous. It is 30.5 million children in the National School Lunch Program, and these are basically the kids who need to have some subsidized lunch. And if you look at, you know, a kindergartner starting school today, by the time that kindergartner finishes high school, he or she will have eaten about 4,000 school meals. So the impact of that on the child's nutrition is absolutely enormous, and we do know that we're in the midst of a growing epidemic in children's health. And, you know, the rate of diabetes and the rate of child obesity has just become a massive crisis.
What does your typical school lunch look like?
Well, it's really not easy to say what a typical lunch is because, you know, I have been to some schools where it's, you know, just the terrible fried food or something that's straight out of a can and something that, you know, a lot of the kids are just uninterested in eating at all. And at the other end of the spectrum, I have been to schools where there is a salad bar that is so beautiful that, you know, I would pay the equivalent of a restaurant meal for it. So it's very much in change right now.
And what are the socioeconomic and demographic factors that determine the health of children and the access to healthy food that they get?
Well, I'm not sure I entirely grasp your question.
Well, aren't children of color more likely to be in schools where they get worse school lunches?
You know, I haven't seen research on that per se. I certainly know that children of color are at higher risk of, diabetes, for instance. That child who is born in the United States right now, if he is African American or Hispanic, he has a 2 in 5 chance diagnosed with diabetes during his lifetime, and that is extremely high. But I must say I haven't seen the research that ties it directly to the school lunch, although there's reason to believe that what you're suggesting is very true.
Well, there's certainly impetus at the national level to change the way in which school lunches are what the school lunches look like. And there's such a history of the school lunch program, very much tied to the history of the development of agribusiness in this country. But let's talk about some of the things that you discuss in the book Smart by Nature that are very positive examples of how children have access to farm fresh food. And much of this, of course, being done at the local level, much of it as the result of pressure by students and teachers and parents themselves. Can you give us some examples of schools where they have partnerships with farms and also some even growing foods on their own campus?
Absolutely. You know, right in the Santa Monica and the Riverside area, the schools have established great salad bars and connections with the local farms there. And, you know, what they're finding there, as well as schools that I've seen in Berkeley and, you know, schools in Oregon and schools throughout the country, is that there are numerous advantages. It's not only the health advantage, but there is the economic advantage by forging the partnership between the school and the farm. The farm has a significant customer to rely on, so is often, you know, helped to stay in business, while the school, for its part, gets the advantage of having farm fresh food. There's a school in Lopez Island, which is in Washington, off the coast of Washington, and there they forge this connection with the local farmers to such an extent that the kids go to the farm and help pick the food, and then once a month they have this community dinner, and the farmers come to the community and come to the school rather to eat with the students and the faculty and the staff. And I think, you know, one of the great things about what that symbolizes is what really underlies all of this movement that we're looking at, and that is the enormous potential that there is for schools to teach young people more sustainable ways of living.
So in a way, you're talking about several intersecting issues here: health, economics, and given the state of the economy today, more and more people are thinking about relying on local economies, and then education itself, where school children are taught the importance of of how to grow your own food, something that many schools over many years now have moved away from. We've really relied more on classroom teaching and less on field work, but you're saying that this really brings students into the farms.
Exactly, and I think the other significant factor that figures in here is the environment, because what this movement is recognizing is that schools have a very critical role to play in helping us address the numerous environmental crises that we now have. And,
and that's a fourth aspect, actually, the environment.
Exactly.
There you go.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And there's sort of the perhaps softer reasons for doing that, which is that many students today are very deeply concerned, what they hear about climate change and water pollution and so many other issues. And this is a way to help them learn a better way. But it's also absolutely vital because, we know as a culture increasingly now, I think, that we're not on a sustainable path. And this is an opportunity to start fresh with young people, whether it's through food or gardens or, classes where we see them teaching sustainability concepts under every subject area, and help children learn how to relate to nature better from the beginning.
There's a quote in your book that really highlights the importance of this and how egregious the current standard system is. A food educator, Antonia Demas, says there's a clear analogy from school cafeterias to animal feedlots. Herd them in quickly and feed them high-density foods in a short amount of time in crowded conditions. Lisa, the business of school lunches is a big business. There are major contracts with very large companies to provide cheap but not necessarily, of course, healthy food to our school children. Do you see these major corporations looking at what you're suggesting as a major threat to their business?
As a major threat? No, I don't know if they see it as a major threat, but I think that they do increasingly feel some pressure to change what they're delivering. I think we've seen that happen, and we're seeing that with major corporations of all sorts right now as the consciousness around food grows in general, and people are, it's front page news now in a way that it was not even 5 years ago.
And there are a number of bills floating through Congress. What do you make of the sort of legislative angle on how lawmakers are now tackling school lunches?
Well, I think, the basic thrust that most of us who work in this field would advocate is that there is really the need for, greater funding to go to the schools, because there's an average of about $3 per student per day to support school lunch. About two of those dollars go to, paying for equipment and the personnel and all of that. So once you think about what can you possibly serve up to a child on a dollar a day, you're not likely to come to the healthy alternatives. As anyone knows, when they go into a store, the cheap food tends to be the unhealthy food. So as a bottom line, we need to increase the funding that goes to the schools so that healthy food can be provided.
Lisa Bennett, very briefly, what advice can you give to parents and teachers listening to you who would be interested in making their schools linked up with farms and bringing farm fresh healthy fruits and vegetables to their child's school?
Well, organizing is always a good first step. It's a long-term and complex endeavor to change a school system. So finding other people who share one's sentiments is a real good idea. And, you know, really connecting across the food service personnel, you know, going to the district level if necessary, finding people who share your opinion on the staff, and forming a committee that can keep working on it. I would also welcome people to contact us at the Center for Eco-Literacy, where we've been working on school lunches.
And a website for the organization?
Yes. Ecoliteracy.org.
Ecoliteracy.org. And certainly they can get a copy of your book.
Yes.
Lisa Bennett, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Lisa Bennett is a communications director with the Center for Ecoliteracy and a co-author of the book we've been discussing, Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability. That website, again, is ecoliteracy.org. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, the World Health Organization in 1948 said, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity.